For September 18th, 2009, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
It's episode 77 of the Lullabot Drupal podcast. We get together every week or so and talk about Drupal, although it's been a few weeks because we were at DrupalCon Europe, traveling around Europe, struggling with the language, and trying to figure out what food we were ordering off the menu. Good times for everyone.
My hint is boof means beef.
I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with
Angie Barron
and
Jeff Eaton,
as well as
Addie Berry,
also
Kent Bye,
and
Karen Stevenson.
Everyone order the proper food in Paris?
Oh, man, I ordered a lot of food in Paris.
I don't think there was any improper food in Paris. It was all pretty darn good.
Oh,
and croissants.
Man.
People were having croissant withdrawal after they went home.
And yeah. Oyster season opened while we were there. So I helped myself to oysters several nights.
I think I had the rarest steak of my entire life.
Moo.
Yeah, they brought it out, and it kind of struggled. And
yeah, and they tend to not ask you how you want it done. They just figure you're going to eat it the way that they're going to cook it, which is rare.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. All food tastes horrible now.
Like ashes in my mouth.
I will say, the crazy thing was, like, on the way home, it's like in the airport and the duty-free shop. It's like, oh, you know, grab a bottle of wine, you know, put it in a little container, get it home. It's like the best bottle of wine I've ever tasted in my life, like €2. I go online, I search for it. It's like this little family-owned boutique winery in the south of France. It's all organic, and it's also like an animal wildlife preserve. And it's like, what? Jeez. They just... you know, we'll just stick it in an airport. You
know? Just whatever's convenient.
Yeah.
So, we're going to talk today
about food.
About wine. Yes. Yeah. About the DrupalCon Paris that we just got back from. Do a little wrap up for people who are perhaps unable to make it, or people that just want to reminisce about the event that they went to. There were how many people at this one? About
850, I think.
850 people.
Yeah, I think it was 850.
Yeah,
on a beautiful college campus or university campus.
Yeah,
the building was really cool. It was a little weird trying to figure out where rooms were, but it was a really cool looking building.
Mm-hmm. I felt like a freshman.
If you didn't mind, yeah. If you didn't mind stairs, yeah, good news.
Yeah, there were some stairs. Yeah.
I got
but it was
stared
really
at a lot.
It was handy to the transportation, the train station right across the street.
So that was
yeah. Well, let's do a little Lullabot news up front.
Yes,
and then we'll get into the reminiscing. So first of all, Lullabot workshops upcoming in Toronto, Canada. We've got, they're happening the week of October 5th through the 9th. We're doing two workshops, module development, our API, Drupal API workshop, that's all the rage. Everyone loves that one, as well as the theming and jQuery workshop, which I think, people love just as much. They're both pretty good. We've been doing them a lot, and I think we're pretty good at them by now. Yes, October 5th through the 9th is both workshops, Toronto, Canada, lullabot.com/training is that. We've also been doing this new thing. We started an online workshop. So our first online workshops are workshops that happen on the web. Some people call them webinars. But we've been trying to avoid that word.
We hit those people.
We try and not make up. We're trying not to make up words. I don't know. So, anyways, but yeah. So and we're doing a workshop called Drupal Fundamentals, which we just started last week, and it went really well. I mean, pat ourselves on the back, but we were nervous about it, and it went really well. It was James Walker, who's didn't make it onto this podcast, but is on past Lullabot podcasts, has been running the workshop, and it was really cool. It's got a little video in the corner there, and you get to see James, and then you can see his presentation and see his screen and stuff like that right as he's teaching. And I really felt it felt a lot like sitting in the classroom and watching somebody sort of.
There's a chat room too, so like there's questions and answers going on. There's no chat.
Yeah. The physical workshops, there's no chat room, so you don't get people.
Yeah.
What would?
Yeah, I mean it's kind of cool because in a sense, like if you're looking at stuff and it's like, I know what a node is. That's cool. But you can be having other asking other questions and stuff in the chat because we have other bots in there. So it was actually like I thought it was really cool. Like I actually really enjoyed attending and being part of it. Totally different feel, and I really liked it.
Yeah, a lot of really active background discussion with people asking questions and getting their questions answered. And we have some of the Lullabot people hanging out in the room and answering questions and. Everybody in the workshop gets their own Drupal website, sandbox site, their own site that they can go in and experiment with and turn on modules and
yeah, a lot of our students are real cool. Like they're having fun with their site.
Yeah. There's some really fun ones in there.
Yeah. So this is I would say a success, and we're going to be doing more of these online workshops, and they as well will be listed at lullabot.com/training. I think we're going to announce our next workshop, which will probably start in October. I think we'll be announcing that probably like next week. So we'll definitely on the next podcast, we'll be able to announce that. But if you're impatient, you can go to lullabot.com/training or go to lullabot.com/mailing list and get on our mailing list. And you can find out about all of these kind of things, right up front. We've also started doing a new thing with our, video releases. We're calling the early release program, there's sort of a gap of time between when we put the videos up for download and when we get the DVDs in stock. And during that time period, we're just marking the downloads down a lot. And so if you get on the mailing list, we'll let you know about those too. And all of the videos, of course, you can find at store.lullabot.com. There you go. Oh, and one more thing. Goodness, we're doing a lot of stuff. Do it with Drupal. We're doing another Do It With Drupal conference this year, New Orleans.
That happens
in December, December 9th through 11th. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct.
Okay.
It's on my calendar.
And and we've got an early bird discount right now that ends on September 25th. DoItWithDrupal.com. You can find out all about that. That's a big event. That's like the Lullabot's big event. This year we want to announce, we've got Dries Boitart, Drupal project lead, is going to come and give a keynote, there. Mm. That should be interesting because it'll be, I don't know, DrupalCon's a lot more sort of developer focused, and this is a little more, I don't know, what would you call it? End user, site builders, site decision makers.
Solution focus.
So, yeah. A little more prep. Like,
yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Pragmatic, right? Yeah. We're focusing on.
Yeah, how do you actually get the site built at the end of the day, in reality?
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than in Drupal utopia.
Well, DrupalCon, there's a lot of talk about how what would be ways of improving things in the future and sort of helping to move the platform forward. But this tends to be talking about what you can actually do now, real practical solutions. And so although Dries's keynotes at DrupalCon tend to be sort of focused on kind of where things are moving in the future and stuff like that, this will be a much more sort of solution focused kind of where things are happening now. And another thing that we do with Drupal is try and get a lot of like people from outside the Drupal community to come in and speak as well. People who are building websites with Drupal are building websites, and they have the same needs that other people have, whether it's understanding web standards or understanding how to build communities or how to actually get people to come to your site once it's built, project management, all that kind of sort of practical needs of people building websites. So it was a really, really great event last year, and we're really excited to be doing it again this year. Do it with Drupal.com is where you can find out about that. So, so let's talk about DrupalCon and kind of what were the announcements that were made at DrupalCon? What are people's, I don't know, what were sort of the underlying trends and experience and stuff like that that people had there? Where should we start? I mean, I guess the sort of primary thing that started right off was that basically the Drupal 7 code freeze was happening on the first day of DrupalCon.
Sort of code slush.
Well, that was Dries's, Dries's keynote sort of switched all of that stuff up. So it didn't really freeze hard.
It ended up freezing the last day instead of the first day. Or I think that's the way I understood it.
Yeah, we also sort of slushed, right? I mean, there's
plus slush, yes.
Right. So who wants to give a real definition of exactly what's...
Oh, me.
How about Angie, the Drupal 7 co-lead?
It means that I now can't sleep until mid-November. at DrupalCon, Dries's keynote set up the sort of development cycle. So normally what we do is we do a code freeze, which means that no more features get in, and then we just focus on bug fixes and performance improvements and stuff like that. In this case, because we had such a long development cycle, it was like 18 months or so, we went ahead and decided to extend the code freeze a little bit. So what we've done is set a hard date of October 15th, during which time API cleanups can happen, a list of 10 carefully selected features, mostly usability improvements, field API cleanups, and other stuff like that can get worked on. And then the accessibility markup improvements and all this kind of stuff. So basically, this is sort of the malleable phase of code freeze, where we're not allowing new features in, but what we can do is basically clean up the stuff that we have in there, and we have a little bit more flexibility too if we really did something really wrong to fix it the right way before things are locked down. Then on October 15th, what happens is we enter an actual code freeze, and at that point, basically no more API changes, no more database changes, no more markup changes, and we move to instead doing stuff like focusing only on like usability, accessibility, performance, and like documentation and user interface string changes. Then November 15th, we're doing something new we haven't ever done before, is we're doing a time-based string and UI freeze both.
Woo!
Yeah, so that means that the documentation team doesn't have to sit there until like release candidate 8 and be like, guys, please stop changing things. We don't have to keep taking screenshots. I'm very sensitive to that, given that, well, we're all very, very sensitive to bugs because we wrote a freaking book and had to deal with contrib modules changing their UIs on a whim and stuff.
And for people who don't know, screenshots are like the hell of documentation. Putting it out there.
Yeah. So if you like screenshots in your documentation, you like to have UI freezes. So that's the idea, is November 15th, then we basically lock everything down. We focus only on banging out the critical issues fixing all the bugs and all that kind of stuff. Drupal 7 gets released, quote-unquote, when it's ready, and it remains to be seen when that will actually be. But the mark for that is when we have no more critical issues filed against Drupal 7. And you can get a count of the current critical issues by going to Drupal.org and enabling the contributor. What is it, Addie? Is it the contributors block or something like that?
I think so.
Okay. Well, anyway, if you go on your Drupal or user profile, there's a couple of checkboxes for blocks, and one of them has a big list of different issue queues, and one of them is the critical queue.
Yeah, it's contributor links.
Cool, thanks. And so right now that's at 401 issues, so when that gets down to zero, that's when we release. So if you want Drupal 7 not to come out very soon, you should get started testing and finding critical bugs. So yeah, that's basically how that's going to work. So we're really excited. I gave a presentation at DrupalCon about all of the various changes that happened in Drupal 7, and preparing that presentation was like, oh my god, Drupal 7 is going to be freaking awesome. It was just like, there's so much stuff, but you know, there's going to be, you know, it's definitely the longest development cycle we've ever had, so I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, how much new concepts there will be for module developers and stuff. Like, we have a new object-oriented database system, and we've got, you know, some various things with, like, the way that pages are rendered. It runs through sort of a form API-like render system now, which is really, really insanely powerful, but it's just a little bit of a different paradigm shift for themers and stuff like that. So so everyone I've spoke to that's looked at the change is really excited about them, but it'll just be, you know, a bit of a, woohoo, there's new stuff here. And the user interface of Drupal 7 is different as well. We did a bunch of usability improvements and stuff like that. I don't want to talk the whole podcast about Drupal 7.
We'll do another podcast. We'll do a Drupal 7 podcast.
And then I can just go blah and go crazy about it. But yeah,
that would be the Angie podcast.
So Drupal 7's rocking. We've got another, basically 4 weeks, I guess, to finish up last-minute API changes. What that effectively means is that if you have a contributed module or theme, now would be a really great time to start trying to port it and just poking at it with the stick. Because if we forgot something really dumb, it would be really nice to be able to fix it while we can still fix it. And we don't have to do kludgy workarounds starting after October 15th when the APIs are actually locked down. So, yeah. That's my little spiel.
So I'm sort of telling people we'll probably see a Drupal 7 release, I'm guessing, around the beginning of next year, sort of around New Year's, give or take a little bit. That's sort of my gut feeling. Is that your gut feeling, Angie?
What was the time? I'm sorry?
Just like
beginning of next year.
Like January 1st-ish.
Well, we should totally start a betting pool.
Well, that's never, we've learned that lesson in the past.
I'm going to say February 14th, Valentine's Day.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Because I'd none say, of us have lives and, you know, no.
Yeah, I think originally it was probably going to be around January, but things got pushed back with more stuff going in. So I'd say probably, like Angie said, mid-February or March.
Yeah, I think the beginning of January is going to be too soon.
Yeah.
Given,
and we probably won't see people really diving into building Drupal 7 sites until next summer. But there's been a real big push around, and we should probably put all this stuff on the Drupal 7 podcast, but there's been a really big push around people getting, you know, vowing to get their, as you go looking through the Drupal module repository, a lot of people have sort of band together to vow that their module will be ready when Drupal 7 comes out.
I put that on token.
some people like Jeff
is core now.
People like Jeff Eaton are not trustworthy.
No,
saying that because tokens in core. I see.
Yes. Yeah.
Voting. You also happen to be not trustworthy.
It's a little one, a little the other. But no, like, voting API has been ported to Drupal 7, and there is, in fact, a beta release of voting API for D7 that's been out for about a month and a half or so. There's some functionality that's waiting on other modules that voting API sort of optionally depends on that I'm probably not going to do an official full release for D7 until those pieces are in place. But if, like, you want to port your voting module to D7, there is a working, perfectly running, smooth copy of voting API out there and available for download on D.O that
nicely done.
Is there for D7.
Sweet.
Cool. And the
I'm
crazy
not gonna
thing
promise
is,
my module will be upgraded, but I'm not crazy.
There is a pledge that you can take, though, called D7CX, and basically what you do is you stick a string,
I'm so not going to do it.
No, but that's fine, but other people might want to do it, because it's really important, because basically what you're doing is you're vowing, you're making a pledge before the entire world that you're going to port your module and have it ported to a stable release on the day that Drupal 7
that in sickness and in health.
In sickness and in health. At the risk of your own peril. No, I'm just kidding. But no, it's important because, you know, as we know with Drupal 6 was released in like February of 2007, and you really couldn't build big sites with it until about, I don't know, a year later or something, because the lag was so bad with the module porting and stuff. So the idea is like, let's all sort of make an agreement that, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a good initiative.
Well, we can bang people over the head with this again when we do the Drupal 7 podcast.
Oh, right. We're going to do a Drupal. Right. Okay. Sorry.
So, back to DrupalCon. Kent, you've got a habit now. Two DrupalCons, walking around with a recorder, interviewing people for the Drupal Voices podcasts, which go up on lullabot.com as well. There were like 50 of them for
DrupalCon DC.
DC, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I was able to get about 43 or so, but probably about the same amount of time. And I got about over 8 hours worth of interviews with people. And the big trends were, of course, Drupal 7. I did about 9 or 10 different interviews with specific people about what they were working on in Drupal 7. So we'll be sort of previewing before our big sort of Drupal 7 podcast. We'll have sort of previews from the actual developers who were working on specific things. But yeah, there was a number of different announcements that happened too over the course of the week. And I was also just able to talk to a lot of really interesting people, like Carolee Nigise, also known as CHX, just some prominent figures within the Drupal community who live not in the United States or originate from places not from the United States. So, there's an international flavor to this.
We should call this next round, instead of calling it Drupal Voices, we should call it Drupal Accents.
Yes, lots of different accents from all over the world. But yeah, I think the other things that were happening, there was a number of different announcements that were happening. Acquia just announced their Drupal Gardens, which is their hosted, and also their hosted Drupal hosted Acquia hosting. So those are two things they announced. But their gardens, Dries actually did a demo. And they posted a video of it online, which I saw the video after the fact. I wasn't actually there.
It was a very small room. Took me a while to find the room. And then once I found the room, that was packed, and I had to sort of squeeze myself into the back. But if you go to DrupalGardens.com is where that lives. And it's basically host. Did Drupal, but they've got some nice features, particularly around like theme building, theme configuration, and creating your own kind of look for your site and stuff like that. It's really neat. And then they've also got their Acquia hosting stuff, which they didn't talk about there so much, but they also they're working on a system where basically you can sort of come and build your site at DrupalGardens.com, and then if you wanted to sort of install your own modules, sort of bigger things with it, turn it into a bigger site, you can move it over to Acquia Hosting and get, you know, full access to do more
crazy Drupal crazy.
Crazy Drupal crazy, exactly. And, you know, you could go and download all those crazy modules from Drupal.org and install them and watch them do funny things to your website.
If my site runs in the cloud, can XML sitemap scale?
I think you may be getting a little too...
XML sitemap scale.
yes. We had some... you guys had some issues with the XML sitemap module on one of our consulting projects.
But this is not the Contrib Sadness podcast.
We'll save that for the Contrib Sadness podcast, yes. Yeah, so there is, if you go to DrupalGardens.com, there's a link to their demo screencast, and you can see the demo of it. It looks really slick. Nice stuff. Let's see.
There's a lot of cool projects with code names that are coming out now, like Pantheon.
Well, yeah, that's another one, and a lot of like nice slick Drupal websites. Pantheon, you want to explain what Pantheon is?
I don't know what Pantheon is. I heard a lot about it. I didn't catch the information. I was hoping someone else could explain it to me. I am the question-asking shill.
I actually did a brief interview with Zach Rosen. We'll be playing that probably within the next couple of weeks since it's the news from DrupalCon. But yeah, Chapter 3 has been working on a cloud hosting, Amazon EC2, you basically kind of click a button and you got like a server instance up and running. So they've been working with The Economist. Actually, a lot of people have been working with The Economist. The Economist kind of mixed and matched a lot of different Drupal shops, Growing Venture Solutions, Moshe Weitzman, Chapter 3. And, so they've got a lot of different fingers in the pot of The Economist. And one of the things they're doing at The Economist, which also spoke to Stu Robinson about, is this continuous integration, which basically means that instead of taking their economist.com website and like waterfalling it in terms of just redoing the whole thing in Drupal, they're kind of like focusing on little chunks at a time. Like they'll do the commenting system in Drupal and spend 3 weeks and do everything they need to possibly do to have all their comments on their site be run off of Drupal. So then they'll spin up different EC2 instances in the background to kind of like mix and match their website, kind of like a Frankenstein monster type of situation. So it's kind of blows my mind as to how they actually.
So they're sort of like The Economist is sort of slowly moving over to Drupal. They're kind of rolling out different features with it's Drupal based, rather than kind of biting the whole.
Right. You know, exactly.
Taking a big bite. Yeah. So let's see. So yes. First of all, I also just want to mention. The Economist is actually going to be one of our case studies at Do It With Drupal in December, and so we're going to get them to come up and sort of talk about how they have moved over to Drupal and how it works, and sort of show us like what modules they're running and stuff like that, and people can ask them questions about all the performance tweaking that they've done and stuff like that, and how they're using. EC2, which is really interesting. That's come a long way. I was talking with Josh about the Pantheon stuff, and I took a look at Amazon EC2 and, you know, thinking about it with an eye towards Drupal, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago maybe, and it was just like not really quite there yet, but it's much better now, and they've got some really interesting stuff. And this Pantheon stuff is very cool. You can find it out about that at getpantheon.com, and it's another nice looking Drupal site that people at Chapter 3 put together. And there's a demo there showing how to roll out Drupal in Amazon EC2 using their packages and stuff like that. It's really cool. Really cool.
It's like having a server in a box.
Yeah, I really want to spend some time messing with this.
The box has a button on it.
And actually, Josh, it looks like Josh Koenig from Chapter 3 will be coming and talking about hosting Drupal in the cloud at Do With Drupal. I'm just going to sound like a broken record promoting Do With Drupal.
Was Do It With Drupal done with Drupal?
DoWithDrupal.com? Yes. In fact.
Excellent. Excellent.
In fact.
And it's on Drupal 6 now.
Mm. Yes. It's not as good looking as getpantheon.com, though. Oh, well.
Get your pants on.
Getpantheon.com.
Get your Pantheon. Yes. It could work.
Totally.
Segway.
another announcement was for kitchens. Anybody want to talk about Pressflow?
Oh, Pressflow is awesome. It's the bomb. Pressflow is actually a really, really interesting concept. It's essentially a distribution of Drupal that Four Kitchens has been maintaining. Normally inside of the Drupal community, there's a strong resistance to, quote, forks and alternate distributions. We've got a really strong ethic of, you know, you stick to the mainline Drupal core and, you know, any modifications you have, you make in a module and stuff like that. Four Kitchens has actually been doing their alternative distribution, a slight fork of Drupal for, I think, a couple of years now, and they've been keeping it up to date, and they've shown a really, really great model for how this can be done in a way that is sustainable, doesn't screw over customers who are using it, and ends up really helping the Drupal project in the way. Basically, it's Drupal with a lot of the tweaks and patches that are necessary for really, really high performance, high availability, large scale websites. Stuff like, you know, archive.org and the Internet Archive and, you know, the really big Drupal sites that have to deal with just massive quantities of data. Pressflow is Drupal with all of those patches already in place. So things like patches to allow you know, better proxy support, more changes to allow things like MySQL master-slave configurations so that you can have multiple database servers handling different you know, chunks of work on your website rather than just having a single beefy server taking all of the heat, stuff like that. So Pressflow is both a way for existing, you know, sites that need those kinds of tweaks and high availability features to say, I'm using Pressflow rather than just I'm using Drupal core and these 19 patches. But it also allows people who are developing those patches on Drupal.org and sort of working on them and hashing through them to say, this is also proven. You know, we want this to go into Drupal core in like, you know, D7 or D8 or something like that, but it's already proven itself because it's a part of Pressflow and it's helped, you know, helped improve performance on these, you know, dozen really high-level, high-scale sites. It's a really cool model, and they're doing a lot of great work with it. It's not a huge deviation from the normal, you know, Drupal core because it stayed very focused on high availability and performance related features.
Yeah, it's been great though because in Drupal 7 you sort of developing in a vacuum to some extent. You're scratching itches that you know you've had, but you don't have the feedback of, you know, 20 billion other people using your solution and making sure that it's solid. So having that sort of constant feedback from the current stable release has been invaluable for those sort of tweaky performance issues. And I think most of them made it into Drupal 7.
Yeah, that's actually one of the big goals of Pressflow, to say that like Pressflow 6 is primarily stuff that will be Drupal core 7.
Hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So it is technically a fork in that the core has different code, but it's a fork with a purpose.
It's a fork. It's sort of like a spoon.
It's a spork. Sort of like a it's more like a spoon, yeah. Cool. And yes, if you go to fourkitchens.com, F-O-U-R, kitchens spelled out .com, there's a link right in their primary navigation to the Pressflow stuff. And I also rewind for a second, Jeff, did you say that archive.org is a Drupal site?
I need to go back and double check. I know there are...
Oh, you're getting nailed on it.
Hold on. I know that there are portions of archive.org and the Internet Archive that are being run on Drupal.
Oh, okay.
I know that they have a whole cluster of different sites and different services that they maintain.
They do.
I can't remember which one, but I do know that they're doing some really large-scale Drupal work and that Four Kitchens actually worked with them to help with their scaling needs.
Ah, okay. Cool. So we can just sort of spread it around as a rumor. I'm viewing source on internet on archive.org, and it does not appear to be Drupal, but there's Drupal in there somewhere, folks. Nosing around.
Find
there's a little Drupal in all of us.
There is. Oh, by now I probably
isn't
got
that like a movie called Aliens.
So
in space, no one can hear you. Upgrade.
Another big announcement, nowpublic.com, longtime Drupal site, sort of one of the earliest, if not the first Drupal-based project to raise venture capital money and and stuff like that. It was announced the first day of DrupalCon that NowPublic has been bought by the Examiner, examiner.com, which Dries in his keynote pronounced as Examiner, and I thought that was great. So not only have they raised all venture capital, but now they've sold. Mike Myers, who was the lead guy over at NowPublic, is now becoming the CTO of the Examiner, and Examiner.com will be moving. That's the rumor I'm starting, at least.
The kibosh.
will be moving over to Drupal. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like I don't hear about Examiner.com as much as some other sites out there, but apparently it's a bigger site than the Huffington Post, and it's a hugely, hugely popular site. Will probably be one of the largest, most popular Drupal sites out there.
It's a top 100 site, so
there you
go. It's got individual outlets in each city, so it's kind of like local newspaper stuff, and they have citizen reporting, citizen journalism, so it's going to be...
Which makes sense with NowPublic. Whoa.
Yeah, I think a big thing that that NowPublic has been working on but hasn't sort of publicly released, partly because they've been in these different negotiations to be sold, is their Twitter scan. So they're basically got the fire hose of Twitter, which I interviewed Mike about back in DrupalCon DC, but hasn't been released yet. But I'm starting to see it now. But they basically scan every tweet that's out there and start to do different analytics and graphics and stuff. So I think there's part of the reason why they went with Examiner is because they are more into open source than some of their other offers and options that they had on the table. So should be some pretty good news of. So especially in terms of performance and scalability stuff that they're going to be working on, and hopefully feeding back into either Pressflow or the core Drupal. So should be really cool to see what happens there.
Actually, NowPublic also running on Pressflow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That Pressflow, getting out there.
It's everywhere.
Speaking about Drupal distributions, there were a lot of people talking about Open Atrium and features, which are technically separate things, but they're sort of both brought to us by NowPublic, and Open Atrium features the features module.
No, by DevSeed.
Right. Yes. Who did I say?
NowPublic.
Oh yeah, no, DevSeed. Sometimes
there's a lot of Drupal companies these days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very different
development seed, and we had Eric Gunderson on the recent podcast talking about those things, but they just continue to move forward in really cool ways.
I did a brief interview with Eric, and he sort of said, like, just for him seeing what's on the horizon, he really sees that features are going to be kind of exploding soon, with more people working on features, bundling up lots of different functionality, and Open Atrium is related to features because it's actually using the features module. And just in talking to other development seed developers and thinking back to the last DrupalCon, the features module didn't exist at all. So it's kind of amazing how fast things just sort of go forward.
Well, and didn't they also got some Knight funding. Were a Knight Foundation awardee as well. So that definitely helped, but they've been working on it for a long time before that.
They also did a BOF, and the room was absolutely packed.
You want to explain what a BOF is?
That is a birds of a feather, and that is some of those sessions are regular sessions that people plan ahead of time and set up ahead of time, and then they also have a board, a whiteboard, where you can just do birds of a feather sessions that you either plan ahead of time or at the last minute. And so this was a birds of a feather session, and they did a demo of features and how this distributed. The features can be imported and exported, which is very cool. So you can set one side up and set all your features up the way you want it, and then export that configuration and import it any place else that you want to, and you pick up all the settings. And everything's in code rather than in your database, which is really nice. And it was anyway, there was a huge amount of interest, and the room was just packed. So it was very interesting.
I suppose especially interesting for you, for people who don't know, maybe you're new to the podcast, Karen is the one of the main maintainers of CCK, and it seems like there's a lot of really interesting stuff, particularly around CCK and views and creating features based on those sort of building block kinds of things.
Yeah, that's the big emphasis is pushing as many modules as possible to support importing and exporting of their configuration, so that you don't have to do it all by hand, and you have ways that you can do these kinds of things. And there are a lot of modules that are starting to do that, which is going to be really interesting and useful.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Vue's really paved the way for that, and I think it sort of opened a lot of people's eyes when Vue said, "Oh yeah, you can do all this configuration and then just spit it out as a text file and import it somewhere else." A lot of sort of light bulbs lit.
Yeah, although it's taken a while to sort of get it to this point of approaching critical mass where it's like becoming the cool hip thing to do. It was sort of a cool hip thing that Vue's did, and everybody else was just sort of like, that's cool. but now, especially with something like features coming on that really sort of is pushing that envelope and really, really, you know, it's just sort of really putting it sort of as a central thing for people to consider and think about and work towards now.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, so I mean, to summarize, that features is basically the ability to sort of turn on and off sections of functionality for your site all at once. So you could turn on a feature for a photo gallery, and it might actually do some CCK configuration and views configuration and image cache configurations all at once, stuff like that. As I mentioned, we do have an entire podcast about that. Go back and listen to that if you're interested in finding out more about that. There were some interesting sort of trends at DrupalCon. I did a keynote at the design camp in Boston, and talked about DrupalCon DC as basically being the conference where the designers finally got a voice in Drupal, and there was sort of the rising up of the designers who had kind of been sort of sitting quietly in the back before, not really sort of understanding all of this sort of techie talk at DrupalCons. And finally they said, you know, we should actually have a better voice. And there was some really interesting stuff that came out of that. And we saw that a little bit more at DrupalCon Paris. There was an interesting little, what would you call it? A bump in the road? A little tiff?
A little shouldering?
A little I'm going to call it a family misunderstanding.
I should find the actual post. But so Mark Bolton, for people who don't know, Mark Bolton is the guy who has, his company was hired to do the redesign of Drupal.org, which hasn't launched yet, but there's a redesign effort out there. There's the design that Mark did, which was probably done, 10 months, a year ago, something like that. And then Mark was subsequently hired by Acquia to do a bunch of work on Drupal usability for Drupal 7. So Mark's been getting intimate with Drupal, but he's really he's a web standards guy, designer, and is real interested in typography and stuff like that. So he's coming from much more sort of design front end kind of an approach, as opposed to a lot of the Drupal community, which tends to be real, I don't know, heavy duty PHP developer kind of people. And so Mark posted a tweet on Twitter. Basically, I don't know, what did he say? Something about he said, I'm sorry, but the HTML output that views outputs is simply atrocious.
Pretty much that was
it. You know, it was just that. You know, it's kind of like a little, it was just blowing off a little steam. It's fine. And, you know, it kind of is. I mean, I've got to be honest. Like, you know, when you look at what views outputs, it's usually not exactly what you want. It's, it covers the point well. it adds a whole lot of divs to make sure that it's added classes and IDs around everything that a CSS person might need in order to be able to style things without needing to go in and retheme things and edit things. But I don't know. It wasn't actually Earl that was the first person to kind of jump on Mark. But basically, what Mark found was that the whole Drupal community kind of jumped down his throat about it. I don't know. Anybody?
Well, this is the problem with Twitter. It's like 140 characters is enough to get you in a whole lot of trouble, and it's not enough to get you out of it. So it just kind of went from bad to worse because, you know, Earl kind of took it like, dude, why of all people are you attacking me for this? And Mark's like, I'm not attacking. I'm just complaining about something. And people are like, why are you attacking Earl? And it just like went like... And then, why do developers hate designers? And it just, like, rolled downhill from there. Yeah. So, the summary is Twitter sucks.
Well, looking at it from Mark's standpoint, I mean, it was, you know, you get a lot of Drupal people who, I mean, Drupal's free software, it does so much, I think people are so appreciative that it exists and it helps them in all the ways that it does, that any criticisms of anything, I mean, especially something as sort of cornerstone as views, people are quick to jump to the defense of, and maybe.
Well, I think it's more an indication that open source people heavily involved in open source projects get personally invested in them, and like you know, they're taking parts of their soul. I mean, you know, all of us who work on Drupal longer than like a couple hours a week are really making it quite a personal investment. And so it's easy when you're that invested in something for when someone says some off the cuff remark to take it personally.
I don't know. I think characterizing this as defensiveness is misrepresenting it. I mean, Mark Bolton's design, Mark Bolton's design for Drupal.org is terrible for my blog.
For your blog.
Right.
Right.
And ultimately, that's the problem we've got. Mark Bolton's design, or anyone's design, isn't for every possible thing that someone could deploy Drupal on. The designer, to some extent, has the luxury of tailoring their design for what they're trying to build. And the ultimate challenge that's being faced by module developers as they build tools that have to spit out HTML is they can't tailor it for anyone's blog or newspaper site or whatever. And ultimately, the HTML output has to end up being customized to some extent by someone along the way. And the theme system, for better or worse, is how we end up doing that. So I think one of the things that we're really running into the community now is people who are arriving and haven't yet learned the theming system, or haven't, you know, invested the silly amounts of hours necessary to, you know, learn about Drupal's data models in order to manipulate the theming system or whatever, but aren't willing to just layer CSS on top of heavy, verbose markup. They want to have clean, tailored markup that's exactly what they want for their design, but they also are having to come up to speed on a really, really deep and complex templating system. And I think that's ultimately where this tension lies. And because Views is one of the most sort of abstract and generic tools that we have, it's where a lot of that tends to bubble up.
And it's a completely generalized solution. I mean, I think your point about Mark's design, it's, you know, design is not a generalized solution, but Views is a generalized solution, and it just sort of creates these buckets into which you can kind of toss whatever you want. You want it to output images or paragraphs of text or single line titles of things, and it just sort of creates a really generalized solution. And you need to kind of get in there and tweak it if you want it to be as clean as
and And you know what? Angie's totally right. You know exactly what sentence I said is going to be quoted on Twitter. I'm going to pay for that.
I totally agree with the objective arguments as to why there's tension there. But in terms of why this blew up as big as it did.
Right, it turned into this huge, battle of the gods.
It touched a sore spot in general. I mean,
right, and I think, right, I mean, and I think there's also other backstory in the sense of there's been a lot of tension back and forth throughout this entire development cycle on D7 with the D7 UX stuff and you know all the, it's like serious like growing pains with our community generally, I think, and this is just true of human communities. This is nothing to do with Drupal or open source, even really. I think at its heart, you know, it's just there's new blood and new ideas and different things that are happening. But it was just like a remark that Mark made, and then some reaction from other people, and then instead of it being some discussion about the markup in views, it became, you know, developers and designers hate each other and there's going to be a knife fight in the atrium at 2. You know, and it was like, what the hell?
I was there. Like, there was no blood spill.
Awesome knife fight.
They didn't kick us out of the...
It wasn't a knife fight, it was a blog fight. I'm going to blog it. I'm going to write a blog post.
That's sort of like a slap fight.
You with my words.
Yeah, and I actually got a chance to do a pretty extended interview with Mark. It was over 20 minutes, and it's actually one of my favorite interviews. Just a lot of interesting issues are coming up. And the other thing that's that the blog posts that were going back and forth leading up to the conference are all made up blog posts where he's talking about how, as a Drupal developer, you don't need a designer to get the functionality done. You usually need one to actually make it usable and to have that sort of polish on it. But a developer can kind of go in and participate in open source. Whereas a designer, they need a developer in order to interface with the Drupal process, because a designer will come up with a singular vision for how something is supposed to look. But then an open source developer will need to kind of like chop those up into chunks in order to actually implement it. So it's kind of like this frustrating process where, you know, they're used to kind of like going through the process once and sort of delivering it, and then they sort of walk away. But in open source, they have to have both the persistence to be able to see their vision through by, you know, first chopping up into little pieces and then sort of implement it. But they also can't kind of do that by themselves. They have to pair up kind of like with a developer in order to really interface with the open source community. So I think it was like that specific tension was bringing up all these different points, and that's sort of that feeling that the designers sort of need those developers in order to really participate within the Drupal community.
Well, I don't know that I agree with that, because I think that saying that the only way, like, that basically is creating a bubble where there's an open source community and there's designers and they're not the same thing. And I don't think that's true at all. I think that there are lots of designers in the Drupal community, and they're very much involved in creating themes and creating resources for each other. Reviewing core patches, the whole thing. I can see why Mark would have that perspective, because, you know, he saw his poor work.
Well, and if they want to implement something that requires code, yeah, but there are also other things in an open source community that don't necessarily directly require implementation in code. So, exactly. I mean, of course, you're talking to me in documentation, right? Like, the, you know, my constant struggle is everybody thinks that contributing in open source has to be about the code, and that's a huge part of it, obviously, and that's a big focus for a lot of people, and that's definitely been the focus for D7 UX, obviously. But that's not to say that there isn't a million other ways to interface in an open source community without doing any code. I mean, there are lots of site administrators who don't know code either, and they do a lot, and they have an impact on the project every day without necessarily needing a developer to do code for them for something that needs to go, you know, into core or into a contrib module or something like that. On the other hand, I also understand it's frustrating when you don't know code and you can't just sort of implement and do those things that you want to, and that aspect of wanting to contribute. It's how I started with Drupal, and that's the reason I learned how to code. But I just want to put that out there, that there's always this focus on needing developers with coding skills in order to really have an impact versus a pseudo impact. That just makes me nuts. So, sorry, off the soapbox, down, girl.
No, I mean, I can see that as a pretty valid frustration, because I mean, like, ultimately, it's like, if you have a developer with absolutely zero UX and design skills, and you have a designer with absolutely zero development skills, and you put them in separate boxes, what you will get is a great mock-up and an interaction model that doesn't do anything, or something that looks like absolute crap, but, well, it does something. Yeah. It's like, you know, neither of those are ideal situations, but, you know, in the open source world where you sort of toss it out into the mix and you say, it looks like crap and you can't figure out how to use it, but it'll do stuff, you know, it's a sort of ugly survival of the fittest kind of universe until those kinds of bridges start getting built so that there can be a more collaborative quality to the interaction.
I mean, getting this back on the topic of DrupalCon again, I mean, the reason DrupalCon is so freaking awesome is because you get all of these people together. You get the suits together with the guys with green hair, together with the designers, the UX people, the documentation people, the translators, just everybody from all walks of life. They all get together and they have conversations and they share beers or Cokes or whatever. And it's amazing.
But not Coke.
But just not Coke. Pokes. That's an important distinction, yes.
That was Barcelona.
and then everybody hugs.
And they do. They hug. Apparently there was a man hug between Earl and Mark, which I missed. I'm very sad about.
Does anybody have that on film?
Pixar, it didn't happen. There was actually also a really, really great long discussion. There was after DrupalCon actually closed up, there was a designer's boff that occurred, where I think it was like a couple of dozen of the people who are really active in the design community, you know, Morton and, well, you know, Morton counts for like 12 people. It was actually really cool. It was a lot of designers who were basically talking about, you know, what they were, what their concerns and frustrations were and what next steps were for the people who were really excited about, you know, the kind of stuff that, you know, the, you know, Drupal for Designers conference had, you know, sort of kicked off. And actually a couple of developers also showed up there, and the resulting dialogue was actually really cool. You know, there were certain moments where like designers were talking about, oh, you know, the real problem is, you know, these developers, they love working in the issue queue, you know, and they can break everything up into this. But, you know, design is a, you know, it's a high level problem. And the developers were like, oh, well, you know, that's architecture. But the issue queue sucks for discussing architectural issues too. And there was this realization that it was a shared frustration, you know, discussing big picture issues where you have to sort of lay out a vision that will subsequently be broken up into steps, as opposed to just, you know, firing off a bug report for every single little task that has to be done. That's something that both developers and designers sort of struggle with right now. And there was some really great dialogue about how we could help tweak the tools and build some better tools that would benefit both the design and the developer communities when trying to organize those kinds of things.
Hey, don't forget docs too, because that's a huge frustration for us.
Yeah, you know, it's what's the new plan for documentation? File an issue, you know.
Or go off and make a roadmap, even though we don't make roadmaps in our community.
Yeah, no, I think that's the kind of thing that, I mean, like you were just saying, docs, design, development. I mean, it's everybody sort of feels that, and different sort of ad hoc solutions have emerged over time. But I think it's exciting to see that realization dawn that, you know, even if we're talking different languages in a lot of cases, we're still in this together, and a lot of the problems we face aren't us versus them, but rather, huh, we need some good tools.
Yeah. Well, let's move the podcast along. Do we want to talk quickly about the small core movement?
You have to time box Eaton on this one.
All right. you got 2 minutes, Jeff.
Okay. So there's been a lot of talk about small core. There's even a website called smallcore.org that was set up right before DrupalCon. It's a buzzword that's been thrown around, but it's not a specific project so much as sort of a statement of vision for where Drupal ought to be going. There's a sense that, you know, it's like Drupal 5, Drupal 6, Drupal 7, where the complexity of the system that is Drupal has been increasing dramatically, and we're trying to put a lot of new functionality and a lot of new tools in. And then on top of that, people are trying to build a lot of more customized apps and systems on top of Drupal, and the amount of work that goes into building those things is really tough. Basically, the weight of Drupal becomes a real problem that we have to manage in and of itself, just because, you know, the development cycle, you know, we've seen D7's development cycle has been longer than any previous version of Drupal. And we can say, you know, there's a lot of great stuff that went into it because of that, but it's still something that we have to grapple with and we have to manage. And looking ahead to like D8, you know, unless we can clone Angie, you know, I'm not sure how we're going to pull off another development cycle of this weight. And, you know, it's a heated topic of discussion. So the idea of small core is that we should hold as a goal Drupal core being something that's lightweight and just provides fundamental underlying APIs for module developers to build on, so that there are far fewer assumptions internally in Drupal about what things you're going to be doing with it, what things you're going to have turned on, you know, fewer cross dependencies between the modules that come with core. But there should be better provisions for rolling out customized package distributions of Drupal. The idea is that what we currently consider Drupal, like Drupal core when you download it, is really actually a particular use case for Drupal. It's Drupal tailored for organizing a small group of sort of community discussions with forum and group blogs and polls and stuff like that. It's a nice web app, and it sort of nails the PHP Nuke multi-user, you know, WordPress kind of functionality, but there's tons of other stuff that people are building Drupal with. And if we were to say that's a distribution of Drupal that you can download, but what we really consider core is a smaller subset that's easier to build on top of and easier to customize without putting lots of work into undoing all of the other stuff that Drupal does normally, we would be able to leverage a lot of the work more effectively. That's kind of it. You go to smallcore.org, it points to patches that are in progress and sort of some manifesto type stuff.
Yeah, I think one other sort of quick point on this small core movement is that this sort of elucidating the other tension that's sort of happening between whether or not Drupal's a framework or whether or not it's a product. And Dries actually talked a lot about this in his keynote, sort of talking about the sort of the different evolutions and different products that they go through as they go through like a bespoke system to a product to a service. So as time goes on, you sort of have this process where it becomes more and more like a commodity. But the first step is like the product is these different distributions where you download Drupal and you have basically everything out of the box, like OpenAtrium or other like Pressflow could be sort of that, but you still have to use a lot of Drupal modules. But eventually it's getting to the point where it's a hosted service. And so there's this kind of tension between whether or not the download of Drupal, whether or not you're going to have to download a million modules to be able to do anything with it. And the people who want it to be a product want to just download it and have it work. And so I think that's where the things where the features module and other stuff are coming into the play and kind of changing that dynamic. So it's moving more and more towards Drupal as a product and service. But the people who are developers don't want a lot of the cruft. So.
Well, I think the idea is, I think everybody's in favor of Drupal as a product to some extent. The difficulty is that everybody has a different idea of which product it should be. And the work that goes into building one of those products, the more we tailor Drupal core towards that product style approach, the harder it becomes to build any different kind of product on top of the Drupal framework. So part of the idea is pare it down to the stuff that everyone can build off of effectively and then make it much easier to have that prepackaged, ready to roll, download it, install it, click it, and you're ready to rock with, you know, Drupal for running a Boy Scout group, Drupal for organizing.
I totally thought you were going to say a boy band group, and that would
Drupal for running a boy band.
That's another distribution.
Even cool. Yeah. No, I mean, the idea isn't so much to say, no, it's a framework, screw these people who want products. It's rather to make it easier to effectively build those products on top of Drupal.
My only concern with that, I guess, I know we're going long here, so I'm going to time box myself at 30 seconds. But so I totally get the logistics behind the small core movement, and I think that with the installation profile improvements that got into 7, that Drupal 8, we really could start to do some of this stuff, because up until now, we, you know, install profiles were not, you know, they were a great concept, but not very good on execution. I think there's a lot more you can do with them now in Drupal 7 that's going to really kick things into high gear over the next year. But what I worry about a little bit from the community standpoint is that right now we have this weird divide between core and contrib developers, where there are certain people in core that won't touch contrib and vice versa because of whatever. But there's this sort of divide there where, you know, contrib is sort of this wild west. Everybody gets to be their own boss and, you know, have reign over their own issue queue. The core queue is collaborative. Everybody works together, and or there's politics involved, and you have to, you know, do a whole bunch of, you know, work in order to get other people to look at your patches. So there's different ways to look at both things. The thing I worry about, if we do yet another division where we make a division between the framework and the product of core, and then we have contrib, is that we start to divide the really strong core development team that makes Drupal core so robust and scalable and kind of does this whole mentoring process that happens through as a result of the core issue queue. Like, I learned more than half the PHP I know from helping out in the core queue. And I think if there had been this framework part of the core queue versus the product part of the core queue, I probably would never have interacted with people like Chix or Eaton or Damien or anybody like that, because I'd be sticking with like forum module and stuff like that. So it's just something to, you know, that I'm just cognizant of, because anything that ever touches anything to do with the way that the community is set up, I always sort of get really keenly interested and want to, you know, protect things okay and stuff, because the thing is that the Drupal community is really the reason we all use Drupal, you know, because it, you know, anybody can write code, but the fact is that the Drupal community is really Drupal's biggest strength.
I use Drupal because it's already written.
Well, yeah, but you're using it also because new things get written all the time, you know, right. There's innovation, there's really cool, smart people that are working on it and so willing to help others and stuff like that. I mean, I assume, because otherwise you'd use Django. So, but, you know, like, so we just need to be, I think that we need to just be careful about any further splitting up. I just don't like silos in general, if there's a thing to take away
from. We should have a small core podcast.
We should.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Anyway, that'd be awesome. Time boxed, I went way over my 30 seconds.
Yeah, good.
The next DrupalCon is happening.
That was announced.
San Francisco.
Ding, ding.
Dun, dun, dun.
San Francisco.
If they can find some techies in the area, we might have a big event.
Yeah, that's going to be the real problem, you know.
Yeah, and who wants to go to San Francisco?
Right. Yes.
Really. Yeah. So, but it's in April this year. We've been doing March a lot, but this one's actually at the end of April. It's April 18th to 20th, which is kind of weird days. It's a Sunday to Tuesday, and I'm sure that there will be events both prior and after, sort of similar to Paris in terms of sprints and summits and people talking and going out to parties before and after.
Riding like streetcars and.
Yeah,
totally. Eating rice-a-roni.
It's interesting because my first DrupalCon was in, it wasn't in San Francisco, it was in the San Francisco area, the Yahoo conference.
Yes.
And yeah. That was 3 years ago, and we had 300.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is probably going to be 10 times?
3,000, I think they're talking, yeah.
I would say we could do 10 times. Yeah, it's funny. I've been to San Jose a number of times, and I've been in the area. I've never actually been to San Francisco.
No.
I don't even know. You know, everybody looks at me and they're like, "Dude, you're gay and you've never been to San Francisco?" I'm sorry. I haven't, you know, like done the whole thing, but so anyway, I'm just excited to go to San Francisco.
This is your opportunity.
Okay, we need to have a lesbian night out. One of
you know, my biggest concern is it's going to be in the Moscone Center. And I mean, has it really ever had a tech conference there? Do we know this is going to work?
I can handle that.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, the Moscone Center, where DrupalCon will be happening, is the place where Macworld happens. It is a place where big conferences happen, and it will be happen, and DrupalCon will be happening there. Yeah, they're saying 3,000 to 4,000 people, something like that. It's going to be a big one, big.
It's going to be really awesome.
There's also been sort of a couple of changes in the sort of structural way that DrupalCons are being run. First of all, They've also announced, it's been announced, it will be after this podcast, that the next DrupalCon, the next North American DrupalCon after San Francisco will be happening in Chicago.
Right,
so
at
you can start planning for 2011 if you're inclined.
Get your tickets
actually
now.
Yeah, right.
I've penciled it in.
Yeah. Start learning to make fun of Chicago. So,
yeah, I mean, that's really helpful in terms of, you know, especially when you have a big city where you want to have a lot of people, you need to be able to plan well in advance. So it's nice that the Chicago team knows this far in advance.
We have needed this to happen, to have these things planned out.
In order to find a venue that can fit what we really want in a timely manner. I mean, stuff starts booking out, you know, now. So,
absolutely.
So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. And I think there's also, you know, over the last little bit here, I think we've definitely been learning lessons from each DrupalCon that we have, and I think that San Francisco is going to, you know, will keep improving in it. So I really think that San Francisco is going to have a lot of really good ideas and a really solid foundation under it. So I think it's just going to rock socks. I totally can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, the transition we're doing is good, because in the past, the way the Drupal associations had to do this, based on a whole bunch of things, like lack of manpower, lack of funds, and whatever, is basically they've had to sort of, you know, they got to decide which city the thing would happen in and the team to do it, but that team was then responsible for venue contracts, talking with
for
food providers,
everything,
you know? And they're not run at a profit. All the funds go to the Drupal Association. So basically, we made the decision that, well, if we're going to put that kind of pressure on somebody, we ought to put it on ourselves, since we're benefiting financially from it. And the thing that this helps, too, is what it basically means is that from here on out, the Drupal Association is in the position to negotiate for all this stuff. So we keep the knowledge of what happens between different DrupalCons internal to these regional committees that are propping up. You can go to the Drupal.org front page to read about that. But basically, so we won't have to relearn all the same lessons every DrupalCon.
Right. That transfer of information won't be, now you have to sit down and have conversations for 3 days with the last team. It's still sort of the
same pool of people
who are involved and have their hands in it, which will make the knowledge transfer just so much simpler.
And what I'm really excited about is that it basically means that the Drupal Association hires an event company to do all the boring, stupid boring, stupid stuff, like, you know, like, and what I'm really excited about is it means that, you know, the Drupal Association is going to pay for an event company to do the boring, stupid, you know, like, make sure that what? I can't say if I say all the time.
Bitch.
What I'm really excited about is that the Drupal Association is going to do, they're going to hire an events company to handle all, like, the boring stuff, you know, like security and making sure that the food is, like, whatever arrangements they have for that and all that kind of thing. And the local development, or the local organizing team, gets to do the fun stuff. They get to figure out what sessions are going to, you know, happen, or I guess it's the, you know, local team with the regional organizing, but whatever. Basically, the Drupal people get to focus on the Drupal stuff, the programming, you know, like, getting the local volunteers excited about it and stuff like that. And then the Drupal Association, as a legal entity, takes care of all the boring stuff that isn't fun. So I think that's
awesome. I also wanted to mention, because I think this is actually really cool about that. So it's DrupalConSF2010.org is the site right now until we get the main DrupalCon thing switched over. But they actually have a schedule for what they're going to be doing in terms of when you can submit papers and when the schedule is going to be posted and all that stuff. So I just think that that's just very cool and awesome. But again, that's sort of like that fun stuff of getting the sessions together and making the schedule and being able to have the time to do it and get it posted and all take care of that process and really be able to focus on that. I think it's just awesome.
Yep.
So anyway, that DrupalCon San Francisco, that'll rock. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it.
Yeah, Rice-a-roni con.
Oh yeah.
What else? Any other last wrap up stuff?
I just wanted to mention that for people who could not go to DrupalCon Paris, they are getting the videos up on archive.org. They're probably going to make some major announcement once they sort of are all up there, I think. But you can go to, and we'll put a link in the podcast notes, but you can search for a lot of those videos already and start actually watching the sessions that you missed and stuff like that. And then also, there's a survey up on the DO homepage right now. So if people could just take a couple minutes and fill out the survey about DrupalCon Paris, that helps us with future conferences and stuff like that. So I just want to pitch those things real quick.
Ooh. Also, DrupalCon was everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I love those guys at Node1.
You want to explain that?
A man in a DrupalCon suit wandered about DrupalCon, hugging people and getting stuck in doorways. It was awesome.
Drupal.
Yeah, so Node1 is a company up in Sweden, and at their camp that they had back in the spring that I went to and a couple other Drupalers went to, they had an actual like living DrupalCon there, and it was really fun. And so they ended up bringing DrupalCon down to Paris, went through Copenhagen. Actually went through Copenhagen while I was there, but I wasn't feeling well, so I didn't get to party with DrupalCon. But it's just, that was like so
mascot.
Just freaking weird. It's just weird.
Like, it was fuzzy too. It was great.
I know, it's actually soft, you know, you could hug it. Although sometimes people, when they hug it, they like get their hands down a little low, and it kind of looks like you're kind of, you know, grabbing DrupalCon in the wrong place or something.
Segway.
Well, San Francisco, they're very allowing, you know.
You get your hands all over DrupalCon.
Hands on Drupal action.
Do it with DrupalCon?
That's what we should call this podcast, Hands on Drupal Action. Anyways, all right. Well, on that note, let's wrap up the wrap up podcast. And So
woo!
We
have a ton of new podcast ideas from this as well.
Ton of new podcast ideas. We have upcoming Drupal Voices podcasts. If you're not getting those in your podcast feed, go to lullabot.com and they'll start showing up next week. And you can subscribe to the Drupal Voices specific thing. They're much shorter podcasts. This podcast is, we've got like, what's it, like an hour and 15 minutes long. And Drupal Voices podcasts are like, I don't know, 5 minutes, something like that. You can listen to them on a short drive. It's good stuff. Anyways. All right. So thanks everybody for coming on, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Later.
Bye.
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 Night, Jim Bob.
Walton's reference.
John Boy. It's John Boy, not Jim Bob.
Bob helped do the architecture for CCK. See, it was a combination.
Oh! It was
Walton's reference.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, my God.